This is The Hard Move. Prepare for the worst of us in a Kickstarter special episode as Taylor and I slot our materia, purchase our iron helmet, and hit our limit breaks when we reveal a secret.
Which is a very nice way of saying, like,
Monster Rancher is probably my all-time favorite game, and it is an underrated franchise.
Like, it sneaks up on you when you're not
looking. Yeah, really, it's a sleeper hit. Deep Dark Secret. I've never actually beaten a Final Fantasy game.
Oh, why would you? My name is Sydney Icarus. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm an RPG designer and descriptivist. My guest today is the vibrant mind behind Whimsy Machine Games. His work on Spell, the RPG, brought Scrabble tiles into manifesting magic. I really like it for how it captures the weird otherworldliness of throwing around fireballs. Today, he's showing us his new game, which began its Kickstarter today or yesterday. It's called Fight Item Run, in which you travel deeper and deeper into a labyrinth of chambers, monsters, and treasures, and its dungeons all the way down. It's my absolute joy to bring to you Taylor Curry-Smith. Taylor, can you please introduce us to who you are, including your wonderful voice and your pronouns?
Hi, thanks for having me, Sid. I am Taylor Curry-Smith. As you mentioned, I did Spell the RPG. I've been publishing games as Whimsy Machine for about 5 years, previously under the name Taylor Smith. I was recently married and changed my name. So I am going under Taylor Curry-Smith. I am super excited about this game, and I'm really excited to be on this podcast here with you.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure when you got in touch with me.
Yeah, we our orbits intersected about, based on this Discord history, about 2 years ago. And that was a lot of fun. And I think since then I've seen things you've tweeted, but I don't think we've like really interacted. So I'm glad for this opportunity.
You approached me to talk about this game that you were kickstarting. And I loved the read of it as soon as I pulled it up, because it is called Fight Item Run, laid out like the old Final Fantasy menu options. Can you give me a bit of a talk about what Fight Item Run is for you and what you were trying to do when you designed it?
Yeah, absolutely. So Fight Item Run is inspired by that nostalgic feeling of thinking about like those old school classic JRPGs and Metroidvania style games. Note that I didn't say that it is faithfully recreating the mechanics of those games. I don't think that would be fun in a tabletop game. Other people might. Other people can try that. But yeah, like you said, I wanted to take in the elements that I really enjoy about storytelling games. So play to find out aspects. It's powered by the apocalypse. There are three moves: fight, item, run. And it just sort of evolved from there. My deep dark secret about this game is when I was a kid growing up in the ages that would have been playing the heck out of these games, I never really did. I'm the youngest of four, so I spent a lot of time watching my siblings play games like this. The anecdote of Final Fantasy VII, my oldest brother played Final Fantasy VII a ton, and I just have such fond memories of watching him play it. And he had this joke where he would he named like Red 13 after me, and it was like he was kind of like teasing me, because like, I named the dog after you. But in that moment it was so cool, because like I got to be in that game, I got to see this wild story unfold. The other inspirations that kind of come to mind again is watching my other brother play Mega Man. And this idea that each boss you beat unlocks an item that you get to use in interesting ways that help you in other levels. So that's kind of one of the core spirits of the game itself, that I wanted to be able to have this gear system that reflected that evolution, something between the you go into a new town and buy the iron helm to replace your bronze helm. Mm-hmm. But more nuanced than that, that you can say you beat the fire demon boss and now you have the flame sword, and the ranger has like the flame bow and that sort of thing.
Yeah, when I was reading through it, I was I've been playing a bit of like Diablo 3 again recently, and also a little bit of Borderlands. The thing that I really like about what you've done that isn't present in your Diablos and your Borderlands is what you've captured with like the Mega Man example, right? This isn't picking up like generic stuff that just makes you more powerful. It it really feels like it's the reflection of the things that you're facing and the work that you're doing.
Yeah, that was something that it took me kind of some iterations to figure out exactly what that looks like. But the way that that kind of engine runs behind the scenes is, I'm going to take another moment to say that my cat Sebastian does not like that the door is closed and he can't get in. So if you hear the yelling in the background, don't break your back trying to edit those out. It's my brand.
No, we love Sebastian. We stand Sebastian.
So the dungeon is represented in regions. The regions is going to have 6 traits to it. And whenever you generate monsters, you're going to assign them one of those traits. The depth of the monster is it has like 1d6 health, and it's got one trait from a table of 6 things that you already picked out. When you have these monsters, since they just have this core trait, that gives you a very easy thing to have your gear be inspired by. Mm. So, for example, you have an electric monster that is like shooting lightning bolts at everybody. When you defeat it, maybe you get the shock sword.
One of the things I want to ask you about, because it's been in my head a lot recently, is how you keep combat fresh in a PBTA game. I'm sure that most of the listeners that have had experience with like Dungeon World or whatever will feel the same way I have felt when playing those games, which is that like hack and slash and volley as individual moves don't do enough to keep spice in the game. If you go into a fight and you're just hacking and slashing like over and over until someone's hit points fall to zero, it feels very unsatisfying. And a lot of games have taken different approaches on how to make that feel more climactic or more satisfying. What approach did you take to keep in a game that is like built around fighting interesting baddies to keep that interesting?
Yes, that was definitely one of the big things that I had to work around. I came up through LARP, and actually LARP based on World of Darkness. So you'd absolutely get the ironically puzzle mosaic screen, you know, when you're running around on the overworld and then like bloop, we're in a time bubble in this generic space. And we're just going to go through the and it's funny because that is like almost exactly what happens in overworld RPGs like that. But that is exactly what I didn't want in.
Oh, interesting.
Because it feels I feel like that takes away from the fun of it. However, like I didn't want to shy away from it. I knew that a lot of playtime was going to be used in spent during combat. The next step after that, the sort of just like owning it, there's going to be combat, it's going to be here, we're going to spend time in it, is going back to that soft mechanic, using the flavor to make it feel good. And I run into this with playtests where if you just go in and you say I attack, I use the attack monster move, then yeah, that doesn't feel fun. So what is encouraged, and the way that I like to phrase it, is what is your character's battle animation? Like, what does it look like when you leap forward and hit with your sword, or, fire off your blasters? And then once you build it up, you get to do a combo. And the combo is where you can lay out damage as well as special effects, like you knock them back or you stun them, those sorts of things.
That's really cool. I especially love, you do one of my favorite things in an execute combo where, like, you get a bunch of options, and if you just like, if you're really close to finishing something, you can just like pick damage 3 times, which is really cool.
Yes.
That makes me very happy. Like, I love the idea of being able to pick an option 3 times if that's the thing that you really want. It's beautiful.
The other aspect of it, and I don't know if this is what you were just getting to, everybody has burst timers, and burst timers are my, I love the limit break. Right. I love that, like, I'm going to use a summon to destroy this one single enemy because, heck, I have it. So I'm just going to use it.
Let's talk about the move, because then I can ask you some more specific questions, because I do. That has.
Yeah, absolutely. So, let's get into it.
Do you want to read for us the move that's on the table today, character backstory?
I will do so. So this move is a cutscene move, and I can explain this more later. When a character marks their 5th miss, they have a vision relating to their secret. The player describes a scene from the character's past. They may invent this history on the spot, incorporating their motivations for being in the dungeon. The glimpse may explain or introduce an aspect of the nature of the dungeon. The player may also choose to reallocate one of their starting stat points, not including the bonus from their class.
Cool beans. So there's always a... I always sort of wonder how to approach these things. And where I want to start is kind of at the character marking their fifth miss. The reason I want to start with the fictional trigger for this one, or with the mechanical trigger for this one, is that marking misses and then getting a thing is traditionally an advancement pathway in games.
Mm-hmm.
Is character backstory part of advancement?
It is not. An advancement is, I maybe made a controversial choice here, but there isn't a whole lot of character advancement in this game. And that mainly comes from the fact that in these old school games, usually what's happening is, like, yes, your stats increase, but so do the enemy stats. And each class, and there's, how many did I write? Is there eight of them? There's eight of them right now.
Yeah.
Part of the Kickstarter is there's, you can back to create your own character, playable character option. Plug. So each character has this leading question, like, you know of a monster, like a legendary monster that lives within the dungeon, or like, you know somebody who has been lost in the dungeon. So something that is just an open-ended question that gets the player thinking and says, don't answer this now, just sit on it. So as you go through the game, you can build towards that story. So it is advancement in that way. It is advancing along your character's story. And because it triggers in the moment, like, more likely than not, it's going to happen in a combat scene, because that's when the most dice are getting thrown around. So it could just be, you know, you go to attack an enemy, you miss, and now suddenly this aspect of your backstory is revealed. Mm. So what that does, it lets the player, one, interrupt that, you know, like, roll to hit. So it keeps that flow of combat fresh by introducing this, you know, dialogue scene. It introduces more about the character by building on things that are actually happening around the character, not expecting them to write the backstory ahead of time. And it allows the player to introduce some aspect of the dungeon itself. And part of the dungeon creation, the play to find out aspect of Fight Item Run, is nothing is canon until it's revealed.
I want to ask about the way you've written this move.
Yeah.
For a move that doesn't like have a role associated with it, it's very like textually dense. It's got a lot of words going on. It takes the time to be very so explicitly. Secrets are about the dungeon. Explicitly, it says that you know, the swordbreaker.
Yeah.
Explicitly, it says the swordbreaker knows about a beast in the dungeon. Knows about a truly unique beast in the dungeon. But then the move takes the time to say again, this glimpse may also explain or introduce an aspect of the nature of the dungeon. Can you talk to me about, like, why it was important for you to be explicit that, like, people had that level of narrative authority in this move?
Because Summer told me so. I'll get to that. I wrote these moves. Like I said, this will be my first published Powered by the Apocalypse. I am an active member of the Off the Table community, which is a super awesome group of role players. And Summer, so at Just a Summer Job on Twitter, is the fearless leader over there. She has done some panels and, you know, talks about writing custom moves and just analysis of Powered by the Apocalypse stuff. So she is my move consultant. I hired her to be editor on the moves and look at the content. And she really went through and said, like, make this more clear, like, talk about this. If I just said, like, relating to your secret, I wouldn't want somebody to be caught up on, like, they think that every time this fills up, they have to say another trait about this beast. It gives them that space and that permission to say, well, this is only going to kind of be about the beast, but it's going to be about how this part of the dungeon is relevant to it. And it, I don't think there's anything wrong with being able to hold hands a little bit and have a move say, like, hey, this is all the different ways that you can explore what we're doing here.
Right. That does really interesting. There's something that I love about moves like this, where the first time you engage with them, you're like, okay, like I understand entirely what this move wants me to do, and I can just do it. And like, it doesn't seem that complex, and you just kind of engage with it. And then the fourth or fifth time you're engaging with the move, you're poking at edges of it, and you're like trying to find new ways of doing it. This move is really special in that, like, the first time I read it, I was like, oh yeah, Mark's secret, you get to say that, you know, there's a dragon here, which is cool because you're the sword breaker and you want to fight a dragon. That's cool. But I love the idea that, like, after, you know, 30 hours of this, when you're marking your fifth miss for the fifth time, you're getting to intertwine some really cool fiction that has been coming from other characters, from yourself, and from those 30 hours of play, and being able to, like, really make some assertions about, like, what's coming next. And that is, I guess I'm going to call it, like, an assassin move. Like, it sneaks up on you when you're not looking.
Yeah, really, it's a sleeper hit. Well, yeah, because it's definitely a bread and butter move. It is very much like a building block move, and it's not the flashiest, coolest sounding special power that I could have brought on here, but it was important for me to pick this one.
How many times per session are you expecting a character to engage with this move?
Oh, gosh, that really comes down to... it's going to depend on the party. The first time that people play, it takes a little bit to get into flow, you know, getting used to the controls, if you will. And you might not see it, or you might see it like once in your first session. And you can explore those moments further, or you can just use quick, you know, I don't want to say throwaway, because everything is important.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's okay, because sometimes, yeah, you just want that.
Absolutely. I like to talk about, like, fractals within games, which I'm shamelessly stealing from Fate, and the nature of, like, the zooming in and out on different parts. And this is a game that seems to, like, really want to. It has a move for, like, when you start having an emotionally resonant conversation, you can just, like, pause the fight and finish that resonant conversation. And then when you're done, the fight will be ready for you, which is, like, it allows you to zoom in on those moments when you want to, and it also allows you just to brush over them. And I think you describe it as, like, resolve it narratively, which is a very nice way of saying, like, eh.
Yeah, like, because the monsters are, well, let's just say the lazy game designer in me just said, like, yeah, it's whatever, do what you want. But the source material that we're looking at, you know, you do have those cut scenes where you're fighting some enemies, and then all of a sudden it's a bright flash of light, and then the enemies are defeated, and then somebody walks in from off screen. I think one of the things that helps is there isn't experience that you explicitly get from destroying monsters. This game is about fighting monsters, but you are not put out as a player. You are not disadvantaged as a player if the end of that fight gets to be resolved narratively, as opposed to, like, I wanted to roll those dice that many times to defeat that monster.
Yeah.
Like, there are moments for that. You get to encounter the bosses, and the bosses are like, this is a cool fight. Like, this is the big fight. This is the important one. But, like, the little ones really in between, you are not being robbed by making the decision to resolve it that way.
Yeah, right. Like, if you had an XP on miss system, it would require players to... Oh, that's really smart. If you had an XP on miss system, it would require... players would want to be rolling dice even when there's, like, nothing at stake. Even when they want to progress
that
narratively.
As well.
Yeah.
G'day, movers and shakers. I won't speak too much in this mid-roll because, honestly, there's a ton of episodes still left to get through. I will remind you that Taylor's Kickstarter, Fight Item Run, that we're talking about right now, is active right now, and as I'm writing this, has just passed its funding goal and is moving toward those stretches. So that's how you can support Taylor over at Kickstarter. If you'd like to support us over here, The Hard Move continues to be supported by patreon.com/thehardmove, and especially Blake, Kate, and my dad, with Kirk joining us in the last month. For those who are a part of our Patreon tiers, the extra length episode this fortnight hits our standard talking points. We talk about Burning Wheel, we talk about Final Fantasy, you know, just the things you talk about on a PBTA podcast. There's a lot of Taylor and I just vibing on each other about the games we like. I talk for way too long about Metroid Prime, if that's something you want to be involved in. Also, in the near future, that Patreon will have some information about what's coming next for myself and for The Hard Move.
Fellow fans of The Hard Move, this is Sean Fager, and if you need a little inspiration for a scenario or a complication to keep in your back pocket, consider going to LibriVox.org. Volunteer readers post recordings of out-of-copyright public domain works on the site. By searching for a general genre in the homepage's title bar, you'll gain access to a wealth of stories, ranging from under 10 minutes long to a road trip length. So if you need a spare bit of sci-fi, mystery, or ghost story to flesh out your next session, go to LibriVox.org, spelled LibriVox, and see what they have to offer.
Which is interesting then, because character backstory is a wholly like narrative move. Oh, that's not true. There is a single bit of mechanics there. We'll talk about that at some point. Mechanics are a crutch. Character backstory is a wholly, or is an almost wholly narrative move, and it allows, but it comes up as a result of like more mechanic heavy stuff. Like if you're rolling more dice, you're going to hit character backstory more, which gives you that little bit of like narrative insertion. That's very clever. I like this. Mm-hmm. This is good design.
Yeah. And what, like that, I feel like that was one of my big philosophies coming into this was I wanted to. So one of the games that I've been getting super into lately is Lancer. And I have not been able to play our actual session because scheduling, how does that work?
I know, right?
But digging through the mechanics, I absolutely love that it includes the tactical mech combat to really scratch that battle map itch. Because like I do enjoy games like that. Mm-hmm. But then also when you're out and you're in the pilot, you get to just like hang around. It streamlines, really strips down the mechanics at that point, and it's just narrative. And I thought that that was such a cool perspective to go. And I thought it's a very good and valid perspective to go. And I think with Fight Item Run, I kind of wanted to explore what the other direction is, where they are not at all separate. They are like the narrative of it is crunch. Like by saying your sword is shining and shimmering, that is crunch. That becomes mechanically important when it comes down to like if you're fighting a shadow monster, you can be like, hey, didn't you say my sword was like shiny and bright? Does that make it better against shadow monsters? I'm like, yeah, it does. So that you get to and then yeah, like you said, the other way around, where you have rolled X number of times, percentage of them are misses, therefore you are forced into the narrative exposition scene.
Forced into narrative. Go tell a story.
Talk about your feelings now.
Combat thugs. Oh, that's really good. That's really good. So let's talk about mechanics, right? Because mechanics are a thing that games have to have, I guess. The player may choose to reallocate one of their starting stat points. Now, let's sort of talk about stat points because this is not a game that is very dependent on the player's numbers being in the right place and on the player's numbers going up.
There are the four core stats that are DMG, ACC, SP, and DEF. The jokes is that's what the stats are called. Mm-hmm. And they aren't actually short for anything, they're short for damage, accuracy, special, and defense. It was important for me to have these stats because I think there is a good psychological feeling you get when you know that your fighty character has 3 DMG and they can do +3 damage. And like it does come in other places. Like when you do the burst timer and you're doing your limit breaker, if you have a higher damage score, you are going to be doing a little bit more damage. And like the +/-1 kind of slides the scale a little bit. I also wanted to include this because, you know, you might have to, you might think that like I'm going to be the stabby character, and you realize that you're going to be playing the support role way more. So you're actually rolling like the plus defense. So you just kind of want to like scoot that over. Mm. Narratively, it can tie into the, if you discover something about yourself or you reveal something about yourself and you reveal like this aspect of yourself and how you've grown and how you've changed, it lets you keep those stats from being absolutely static.
I have spoken before about how deciding your stats is really interesting the first time and then like not interesting anymore. You know, being a fighter who has, being a sword breaker who has some SP is really interesting. But then once you've done that 6 or 7 times, it's not interesting. And then the interesting bit comes from like the narrative triggers and the cool gear that you pick up and the way you sucker robot fairies. Soul into a gem so that you can use it on the next baddie is pretty cool. And I want to see more of that.
Yeah. The stance also gave me a way to kind of structure out the classes. So there are 8 playable classes and 4 of them each give a +1 to the different stats. And then the other 4 give a +2 to each of the different stats. But also a -1 to another. And that is inspiration that I pulled from Monster Rancher. Monster Rancher is probably my all-time favorite game, and it is an underrated franchise. And regularly I go on Wikipedia's article for the Monster Rancher franchise to see, like, something new? Something for me? Like, only in Japan, on mobile, 2 years ago.
I want to talk about the fact that... my friend Barry Cook, who is probably listening to this, hello Barry, was ranting on Twitter about Monster Rancher the other day about like games that, you know, when you could like put a CD into your system and it would like make a monster.
You mean the best mechanic ever introduced?
And Barry was like, you know, nowadays, now that like no one has CDs anymore, I would be the best at those games because I just have a ton of promotional copy only releases. it's so good.
I really enjoy that game. I think there is a lot of good feeling to it. If I could make a Monster Rancher RPG, I would.
That is so good. So I really like the cartogramancer. It's a weird word to say out loud. It doesn't feel right in the mouth, and I love that about it. The cartogramancer, which is like magical map making. It's got one of the best lines in it, which is when the cartogramancer wants to chart the dungeon, they set their non-Euclidean charts and fractal compasses. And that's very good. That is very good.
I absolutely love, fourth dimensional, transdimensional, like that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm going to shoehorn that into every single thing that I make.
That's so good.
I love it. I love that idea of... and you know, that's not something that I can point to and say like, yeah, this was like Breath of Fire, you know, and when you got that character in Breath of Fire that could just defy planar existence. Like, no, this is 100% me.
This is all Taylor.
Shoehorning the weird physics that I like. But yeah, I'm glad that you like that one. I think that one's a lot of fun because it is another one of those tools that lets the player just grab the reins of what the dungeon is and, you know, take some significant steps in that direction.
So one of the things that sort of interests me from a GM perspective is this is a game that asks for a lot of creation on both sides. Specifically, like we've said before, like, you know, there's nothing is set in stone. Nothing is canonized until we talk about it, which means that we're sort of starting, and these secrets aren't revealed until we hit a certain number of misses, which means we're starting from like, not a lot of information and building up through play. And a lot of our growth is coming from the fictional tags and like the narrativist elements that surround the play that we're doing. How do you and how does Fight Item Run as a document support people who are like less comfortable coming up with that stuff from whole cloth? People who haven't played all the Final Fantasy games over and over or watch their brother play them. How does it help people who don't have as many easy touchstones into this kind of media?
My deep, dark secret. I've never actually beaten a Final Fantasy game.
Oh, why would you? They're like 70 hours long. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
No. You play them until they're not fun anymore. You put it away. That's...
Yeah. I don't even have that deep of a repertoire. So one of the things that I cheekily refer to is just look to the pages of these books because my graphic designer, Mia Hai Mardikian, is doing a phenomenal job working with these pixel art assets. I'm also working with artist Brian Wolf and they will be providing, they did the cover, but they're also going to do illustrations, like spot art illustrations throughout. And I think visuals in RPGs are really important because that's what shows the players what characters and what elements in the game might look like. Right. I think there's a lot of power in description, but having those visuals, like I have definitely made characters based on, like, I've flipped through and I see like a piece of art and I'm like, oh, that's a really cool thing. I want to interact with that thing that looks cool. Mm-hmm. And lastly, this was a decision. I think this will be my final shout out. So Lauren Bryant Monk is my wonderful, wonderful editor. She read for mostly safety editing. Her and Kiana Shaw did the TTRPG safety toolkit. Mm-hmm. But one of her big points of feedback was examples, provide examples of play. And so part of that is the final version is going to feature a couple of pre-made campaigns, thoroughly described settings to kind of get you a feel of the different elements of play within it, as well as example regions, what traits of monsters in those regions might be, and what things that could be discovered in those regions might be. This is a tool that gives you, like, when the players go into another region and you have to think of, like, I have to do another list of traits for monsters in this region, it gives you lists that you can just pull from.
Yeah, it gives you that jumping off point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very, very special and very useful. I like that a lot. This game has a lot of, like, charm, for want of a better word, in that, like, especially as we're talking about this and tapping into, like, our shared memories of the Game Boy Advance era and previous. Like, it's, this is tapping into, like, a lot of that weird, charming nostalgia, which I really love. And when I was flicking through your Kickstarter page, the pixel art that is the, like, cover mock-up at the moment is just so good. It just, like, it set something on fire in me that I didn't know was there.
Yeah.
Which makes me very
happy. And Hai is such a wonderful graphic designer. They, like, spark with joy every time I, you know, pull up pictures of, like, old cartridge covers, you know, like the old, like, Nintendo Power and, like, old game cartridge covers where they all had that sort of strip animation or, like, strip of illustration and then the black background. I'm like, what do you think about this? Or I've actually been playing Super Metroid lately, too. I gave them the PDF of the manual for Super Metroid, because yes, I downloaded the PDF. I'm not good enough at video game. Like, I don't have the video game language. I'm not fluent in it. Mm-hmm. So I have to, like, look at the manuals, and just the amount of love of, like, look at this graphic design. It's terrible in some places, but it's also beautiful in a very dated way. And so I like to think that Hai has been having, by the amount of emojis and exclamation points that I get in the messages, I like to think that they're having a lot of fun working in these design spaces to kind of evoke that nostalgic feeling.
That's really, really good. Because, like, in the end, like, these are games. They should be fun to make as much as they are fun to play. The Hard Move is created by Matthew Grafflin and is hosted and produced by me, Sydney Icarus. You can follow the show on Twitter @TheHardMove and find bonus content, including full-length episodes, at patreon.com/TheHardMove. Music is by Nick Gravelin. You can find his work at nickgravelin.com. You can follow Taylor @WhimsyMachine, which is a promotional account that mostly just, like, retweets game stuff. I recommend following Taylor @Taylor_CS for his personal Twitter. Content featured in this episode is from Fight Item Run, a pixelated RPG. It's available on Kickstarter right now. Mark experience.